This is the grab bag meeting, that's the format, and you've each been given a little slip of paper that was passed around. If you didn't get a slip, there's some there in the middle. And
there's a bowl.
Oh, yeah.
Okay. I don't know, yeah. Is that basket big enough? Sure.
Well, yeah.
We'll go
yeah.
One here. The basket okay. Computer.
And on this piece of paper, write down a topic that you would like to discuss.
Or a question.
A question or a topic or anything. If you still need a ride back to Portland, write that down.
No.
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 No. And then, depending on what is pulled, then we're open for sharing on that topic. And when we are sharing about whichever topic is chosen, we ask that we avoid crosstalk. When crosstalk means that when we speak, we address the meeting as a whole. We speak in the first person, so we're not to give advice. Please do not share again until everyone who wishes to has had an opportunity to share a deep and twelve tradition of anonymity in mind, placing for two people personalities. So just take a couple of minutes to write down the topic and we can pass the bowl around.
In my earlier days. And I said
It's sort of weird, you know. It isn't something that's part of how I have always been. So, that's fine.
Thank you.
Hi, I'm Terry.
Hi, Terry.
For me, distinguishing which I'm in has a lot to do with my underlying sense of myself. Patience. Well, let me just start with procrastination because I know that one really well. It feels anxious. It feels somewhat like guilt. It feels like a little hole right in here for me. And, you know, there's obvious reasons that those are feelings are coming up. But there's a part of me that actually knows I'm going to face this later. Patience doesn't feel like that. Certainly sometimes there's an energy to want to get moving. But sometimes it's this really amazing calm. And the difference between those two is often prayer to let it go. Give me the patience.
My name is Bonnie, I'm a workaholic.
I
can't say that I do this very well, but now that the topic is here, I'm trying to focus on how it feels, how the differences feel. They both involve pain. The patience with myself. It's like I don't have enough time to do something, so I better not do it now. It involves the pain of my own limitations, the pain of being time limited. And the other one involves the pain of avoidance, which is a different kind of pain. And I haven't learned how to distinguish the two, but I know they're different. And I learn more and more to distinguish feelings by meditating and going in, taking the time to go in and trying to like navigate inside my body and figure out what these pains are. So I think that's all I have to say on this.
Can I speak to that one?
Sure. Very briefly, because I wrote it and I had something specifically in mind. My mother was a very wise person in her own way. Unwise in other ways. But she used to tell me something as a little kid. I didn't understand it for years and years. And it was, you can get used to anything, even hanging, if you start out gradually and keep it up long enough.
You're ready for another time.
Thanks, Terry.
Career versus a job. Does it have to be a versus?
Career versus a job.
A nephew and workaholic.
I
had a career job that I was utterly in love with. Started when I was in high school. Civics class I picked out from one day in class reading something on state and local government. I said, that's what I want to do. And that's what I went after, and that's what I did. Workaholic. And after I was retired from that, I had a recovery job, which taught me that I didn't have to be in love with my job. As a matter of fact, there was no way I could be in love with that job, even though it was interesting and had some service involved and was engaging and nice people to work with. But I was not in love with it, and it was a huge piece of growth for me, where I discovered that one simple thing, I didn't have to be involved with my work.
Thank you.
Thanks, man.
My name is Carl, still a workaholic.
Hi,
Carl. Well, I got a career, no job. So I'm doing marketing so I can have a job too, because I need a job, because ultimately I'll, you know, my finances will run out. They won't run out anytime soon, so I can have an extended marketing foray here. But it's interesting, because if I had the same job, basically, truth be known, I had the same job from the same place from about 1963 to the year 2000. So I was a lifer. Now, of course, my job title changed a few times, but it was basically the same job for all those years working at the same place. And that was interesting. It was hard to leave, but I was given a gentle nudge after being there sufficiently many years. And leaving was one of the best things that I did. And so now I feel fulfilled. I have basically the same career, but I need a job. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thanks, Carol.
I'm
a grateful
recovering alcoholic.
Hi, Marna.
And if in recovery, I hit my bottom in doing something I love, and doing it in a completely out of control way. And part of recovery for me was becoming willing to work for someone else, and becoming willing to do work that wasn't maybe spot on with divine cosmic order and my opinion about it. And it's actually been very healthy for me to work at jobs that I was not completely over-identified with and attached about. It's very counterintuitive, but that has been very liberating for me in many ways, because I can leave at the end of the day. Well, it's easier to leave at the end of the day. I can't say I never don't just want to keep working. But well, it's a really counterintuitive strategy. It's like the opposite of a lot of the New Age stuff about do exactly what you love and throw yourself into it.
Thanks, Gordon.
I'm Gordon. I'm a workaholic.
Hi, Gordon.
I've done nothing else in professional genealogy since I was 22. I flipped burgers and fried fries before that, so this is my career. What I'm distinguishing now, I just realized this morning, is that my job is something I can leave behind when I go home, and my career is how I identify myself with that. And that's exactly what got me in trouble 7 years ago. So now I'm going to be working on separating the two. I'm going to leave my job. I came up with a motto when I'm leaving it, that what happens at work stays at work.
Thanks, Gordon.
My name's Annie.
Hi, Annie.
I'm basically retired. I think when you leave your career and you retire, that's a big issue for a workaholic, because that's a lot of your definition. And I found I really couldn't stay out of keeping my fingers into something for more than just, I think it was about a year that I went back into. But there was a real process about having an identity beyond career. And I mean, I took a job in my education, but I felt like I was out of the career. There's something about career that you want to improve yourself, improve your salary, improve your responsibility, improve your image, whatever. Whereas a job is just something you go to do when you come home. There was something very peaceful and helpful about being retired and doing this job. And I don't know if this, anyway, that's my contribution.
Thank you. Does the collector speak, or do you have any? What can you do to support yourself when you are in work anorexia?
Some of the signs of work anorexia.
I think it's self-defining. I mean, I think everybody has a different definition.
Yes. By analogy with people who have food anorexia, where it was first recognized, where somehow they get an issue that they're not eating enough to sustain their own life. Sometimes it has self-image, body image implications. Sometimes it has revulsion around food. There can be a lot of things. But in any case, they're not doing enough eating to maintain their life.
I don't know what anorexia is.
What
is work anorexia?
Oh, work anorexia.
Avoiding
similar kinds of emotional and spiritual issues around work.
You avoid work.
You avoid work. You can't do it. You don't work enough to sustain your livelihood.
Is there a distinction between work anorexia and work aversion? I've seen both terms in our work.
That's another question for a different graphic out there.
Okay.
Maybe if people speak to it.
Yeah.
Okay. Laura.
I'm Laura
Mullen
calling.
Hi, Laura.
I just had a last time I brought this up today. You know, for me, what I experienced with work anorexia was I worked compulsively all my life, constantly, and then all of a sudden I wasn't doing the paid work that I was expected to do. Instead, I was lying to my boss and telling her how I was doing it. So for me, that's how it manifested itself. I was able to do a lot of other things, but I wasn't able to do things that I was supposed to be paid to do, and I almost got fired. And so what do you do to support yourself? Well, what I did was I prayed, I asked for help, I went to WA, I got a sponsor, I worked with them. I mean, there was no, it wasn't like I could find another way to make money because that was my problem. So I'm sure everyone's a different solution, I'd like to hear those there, but that's actually what brought me in to WA. And you know, I had to pray every single minute to stay at that desk. And sometimes I had to say, please help me turn on the computer. Please help me look at the computer. Please help me. Okay, so that's, you know, and that's how I get through a day when I'm struggling with work anorexia. I pray every second.
Thanks, Laura.
Thanks, Laura. I'm definite work bulimic anorexic.
Hi,
Alan. I had a lot of problems when I was in graduate school, especially I was. Whenever I did something that was for me, I would work anorexic because I didn't believe I was worth the results produced by whatever it was I was doing. And what I really had to do was a lot of prayer. God, please help me to do whatever this is. And a lot of writing about what my fear was about it. When I was trying to do my final graduate paper, I was just writing and writing about my fear and posting it to the internet list. And there's something else I was going to say, and I forgot. Thanks.
My name is Dagmar Pollock. I had an interesting experience with this work anorexia thing. Last year, when I really had high anxiety and depression, I really wasn't able to do the work, wasn't able to do simple things that I knew how to do. And the funny thing is I was praying as I was, you know, spirituality priority, you know, this is, you know, God will help me through this. And so then I was talking to someone and they said, well, sounds to me like maybe it was just, you know, you praying for your will be done thing. Mm-hmm. And it really was. It was that in a sense. But God did give me what I needed during that time, which was to crash and burn in that particular. Well, gratefully, even not as much as it could be graceful, but anyway. So I was able to just, I got to experience that. And then because of the extreme pain of what that work anorexia brought me, I mean, it basically brought me face to face with my fears, and I had to deal with them in a different way rather than just basically praying, God help us to be a certain way, like help me to be more functional in my work, when instead I left my work and now I'm, you know, approaching work in a different way because of this program and other things. So.
Thanks, Doug.
I'm Peter, still a recovering workaholic.
Peter.
My addiction took me to the point where I crashed with a complete mental health collapse. I was really able to walk, talk, or speak straight. And in spite of that, I had the delusion that I could still somehow work coming out of that. But 6 months later, I finally shed that delusion and surrendered to the notion that perhaps the word disabled applied to my condition. And my higher power provided never a generous amount of money, but there was always enough, one way or another, one day at a time, and only one day at a time, for me to get by. I now have learned I cannot work in certain professions. They're toxic to me, even though they're what I was trained for, what I love to do. That's my problem. I love them too much. And so I have found other areas where I can work that are more safe for me, smaller areas. Thank you.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Thanks, Peter.
I wrote the question on Terry.
Hi, Terry. Hi, Terry.
And I've gotten a lot of what people have shared. What I found happening is I was laid off the last time, but I have been fired in the past. And it has felt as though a couple of things. One is the whole concept of going out and applying and asking for a job is incredibly terrifying. But the other one is, I can't imagine myself just doing something, you know, putting a widget from there over here. And I know that has a lot to do with some of that has to do with self-identity. Prayer for guidance, at least general guidance, hasn't been very effective. And so I really appreciate it.
Thank you. Okay. I'm ready to talk with you, thank you.
Beth, did your question get answered?
Pardon me?
Did your question get answered?
No.
She said it was another topic.
I think it did adequately. Okay. Re-entering work after a long period of anorexia. I'll read it again in its entirety. Re-entering work after a long period of anorexia, or balancing career and recovery.
Mm-hmm. Right. My name is Jim. I'm a workaholic.
Hi, Jim.
Hi, Jim.
It's been quite a while since I did it, but I mean, I think I'd had about 5 years of that unemployment before I went back. And Easy Does It is definitely the thing. The water is deep in full-time employment. You know, I went back in very gradually, but even then I was crazy most of the time. Just looking back on it, I would love to just sit with anybody who's going through that, helping to slow down and have some faith that, you know, you're going to get there. You know, it's like, no, it's easy to do it.
Thanks, Jim. Thanks, Jim.
My name is Marta. I'm over at Bulls and Alcoholics.
Hi, Marta.
I'm blessed with a chronic disability from my excess of my disease. And one of the things that really helps me, so I'm a bulimic anorexic workaholic. One of the things that really helps me is to have a 72-hour hold so that I don't accept new things without thinking about them for 3 days. Because I'll either resist something or want to take it on right away. And whatever that first reaction is not usually a higher power reaction. So I have to create more space for higher power and asking for help from friends and the program. Another thing is the time spending plan has really helped me, which is in that 72-hour period to think, because I have very unrealistic expectations about how long things are going to take in my disease, and to just get more real about how long something's going to take and kind of break it down, then that helps me. Helps me pray about it and show up for it differently and to scale up over time instead of thinking I can just jump into the big thing. Thanks.
Thanks.
Thanks, Brian.
Need another topic.
Has technology, cell phones, computers, etc., made your workaholism worse, and if so, how have you addressed this problem?
My name is
upon you as definitely a workaholic. I love technology, and I hate technology. The world of technology has gotten so huge that you can pick and choose. So my career is in this field, and then part, you know, is in part of technology. It's gotten so huge that I can't claim the whole thing. But I hate cell phones. I limit the amount I use cell phones, but sometimes they're absolutely necessary. I limit the amount of time I spend at the computer, but chunks of it are necessary for my life. And I have a belief, and this may be totally misguided, a lot of people have tried to talk me out of it, but I have a belief that if the people who create technology are not workaholic and are not in control, we can use technology to help us not do the work we don't want to do. But I think it's an issue of power and who's creating the technology.
Thanks,
Bonnie.
I'm Laura, and I just want to say, I've had a real problem with that this year because I got a cell phone and I suddenly found myself with, you know, three different addresses where I was checking regular mail, four phone numbers where I was getting voicemail, and three email addresses, and it was too much for me. So I've narrowed it down to two phone numbers and two addresses, and you know, I've narrowed it down some, but I just want to say there's a part of me that would really like to blame my disease on this, and I think it's the other way around. My disease is what caused me to proliferate all these things and go into overwhelm about it. And if I didn't have this disease, I might have made different choices along the way. I might have said, hey, I'm doing that. That's crazy, you know. So I love to blame my workaholism on external factors, but I don't think technology causes workaholism. I think it provides a wonderful outlet for workaholics to be workaholics. I could be workaholic with a pen and paper. So.
There's an article, by the way, in Bigfoot on this issue. So I've already gotten somebody's attention enough to write an article. And for me, I love Excel spreadsheets. I love Word, that you can change things around. And I was raised when, you know, typewriters and, you know. So I think some of the technology is unbelievable. It's unbelievable that you can call somebody at the airport and find them, things like that. The problem is for me is that once I get started, I can't stop. And I lose track of time. There's something about the computer, in particular the television as well, that I lose my time consciousness, and I won't realize how long I spent on a task or how, you know, that's the problem. And having a little clock next to the computer helps me, and setting some kind of time understanding of how long I'm going to spend on something helps me.
Thanks, Danny.
I'm Sandy. This is kind of going to be a repeat, but I have been so sucked in by the computer that I can't get out of the chair, literally. My butt's numb, my knees are frozen, you know what I mean? It's practically impossible to get out of the chair, and I don't know why, but some small task always seems to expand exponentially as a computer. How is this a time-saving device? I don't know. I have to have all of it. It's a complete puzzle for me. And I will also say that I am a computer widow, and that is also extremely painful.
Donna,
I really appreciate the cell phone that I have, that I can call people all over the United States and Alaska and Hawaii. I have no excuse not to contact them, all of you, 24/7. And that's a real advantage for me, because there was a time in my life that when I first got into WA, my WA sponsor that I love to this day moved to Georgia, which is not that far from Florida, the next state up. And I dropped her as a sponsor. We never had any contact after that, because I decided I needed to do something else because the long distance bill was too much. Mm-hmm. And that was true for me with my financial status at that time. But now it's really, really, really nice. I mean, I can't use that as an excuse. And as for the computer that sits on my desk, different than my laptop. The desk piles up, and I can sit at the computer and have a huge binge, take care of all that. That's one of my behaviors, you know. Domain Sunday afternoon from 3 until 9 at night, getting all that stuff cleared up, and then let it sit again. Or I can plan better and do 15 minutes or 20 minutes a day, which is like...
I know. How do you stay connected with your higher power throughout the day? It can be a number of ways. One can be actually remembering to, you know, say a prayer, either because I need help or the adage of the AA Big Book about, you know, when we feel agitated and whatever. Taking a break could be a way to do it. Although I'm only talking more about what could be done, not what I do. Well, I do pray my higher power throughout the day, at least sometimes more often than others. Another way is talking to a sponsor. That when the sponsor asks you questions like, "Have you prayed?" and that sort of thing. That's the answer. Thanks.
Were you first?
No, I think you were. Okay. I pray and meditate every day. I've done that for ages. And I get lots and lots of God's beginning. One time I was really angry at my mother-in-law, and I was praying and meditating about it, and I said, I heard the word detached. She's critical about flower arrangement. So I thought, you know, and like I got so detached by the time she actually died this past year that when we gave her birthday party, she rejected every present that I gave her, and my daughter said, "Did you know, Mom, she didn't like any presents you gave her?" And I said, "She didn't?" No, I just like got totally detached from her criticism. So it's amazing what a relationship with a higher power can do for you.
Thanks,
Cindy.
My name is Fine. I'm a workaholic. I also meditate, not every day, but about 4 times a week. And I try to, that helps me to have a meditative mood throughout the day, or to get in touch with the process of meditation throughout the day, which I call mindfulness, or some people call mindfulness, and everything you do and to slow down. And I have a slogan that I love that helps me do that when I'm in fear or something, and it's, there's safety in the fabric of the here and now. Mm-hmm. And for me, the fabric of the here and now is my higher power. Because there's a lot of details in the here and now. I think of the here and now as a whole universe of detail that can help me, that I don't have to get to somewhere else, I don't have to be something else, I don't have to... It's not scarcity. Everything is here that I can. So that gets in touch with higher power. I'm here and now.
That's fine. Our meeting is now completed. If you didn't get an opportunity to share, please stay at the meeting and talk to someone. We've done the seven traditions. Would someone like to read the promises of the program?
I'm Mary. If we are completely honest about ourselves and together, we can use the 12 steps of Workaholics Anonymous and the tools of WA in our lives. we will soon begin to receive these gifts of sanity and balance. 1. We are not obsessed by work or plagued by work exertion. 2. Adrenaline seeking loses its hold on us. Excessive worry and anxiety become a thing of the past. 3. We have a daily plan of action that faces the reality of time, priority, health, and relationships. 4. Fears that there would not be enough time, money, or love. 5. We learn to play and have fun together. 6. We repair broken relationships and form new ones. 7. Health and self-nurturing return. 8. Self-seeking and ego inflation do not drive our decisions. 9. We lose interest in selfish things and gain interest in and compassion for our partners, family, co-workers, and friends. 10. We experience how well the tools of the program help us handle problems which used to confuse and fear. 11. We ask for help and reach out to help others. 12. We find that our higher power helps us in a way self-reliance never could. Are these extravagant promises? They are already happening in the lives of many among us. For those of you who are new to our fellowship, there are no problems that you can have experienced that are not common to us. We welcome you with deepest respect. When we apply this program with honesty and compassion, a place of serenity grows in us one day at a time.
Thank you.
We were going to haul it to our head of you.
In closing, we are thankful to have this opportunity to grow in respect for ourselves and to learn a healthy attitude toward our work. No matter how deep-rooted and desperate our workaholism, no matter how hopeless our problems seem, we start from where we are. By living the program one day at a time, we begin to experience the freedom and happiness it offers. As we are closer to our higher power, we finally become transformed. We have what we always sought, love, and peace of mind. What seemed impossible is now a reality. If we continue to take action on our program, one step at a time, we find life becoming richer and more joyful. Close with a serenity prayer.